Welcome back, everybody. Sorry for the late episode. I had a family tragedy happen. So I think everybody in this past couple of years understands when these things happen all of a sudden. But today we're back and we're going to talk about the Panamanian monkey job with Sally Kilpatrick.
Hello. I'm ready to talk about the monkeys.
The what is it? Our thieving cousins.
Yes. Our thieving identical cousins.
Cousins. I meant to look up what a Panamanian English accent sounds like. And if they would say it cousins, which I really doubt. Well,
you know, in my former life, I was a Spanish teacher.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think so. But I can't swear to it. Everybody's different. Sophie's fake accent actually kind of reminded me of Salma Hayek, even though that would be a little more Mexican.
Yeah, she's Mexican. It's weird. I mean, I have a good friend who is Guatemalan. I'm trying to think, and that's like, you know, several countries away from Panama, mm-hmm. but I don't think she says cousins.
No.
Interestingly,
no.
She does say robot, which I think is the most darling thing ever.
Oh, yeah.
But this week I heard my dad say robot. So we all say different things, and he's spoken English his whole life. So I texted her. I was like, I just heard my dad say robot. She started crying. Anyways, off topic. So this is our second episode, which is really just the second part of the first episode, because we're still chasing the same bad guy and adding an extra bad guy onto it. So because of that, in my head, it makes sense that this episode was also written by John Rogers and Chris Downey, and it was still directed by Dean Devlin. And yeah, we're going to go to Panama and steal $20 million.
It was a lot of fun. Great soundtrack. The Spanish actually matched the subtitles for once. That's one of my favorite things to do, is if you're watching a movie, I'll be like, that's not what he really said. Everything matched.
That's good. I liked that they, and we'll get to that in a little bit, but that they, I don't know, it was really obvious that the actors were speaking their Spanish lines and they just like had really bad accents. So they were like, we're just going for it. We're just going to do it.
Yeah, it was like, for 1 minute, though, I was about to give Elliot an A+, but we'll talk about that when we get to the specific thing he said.
Okay. Oh, and then, okay, I will ask you a question for a Spanish teacher later as well. But let's get started. So we start right off with Harry walking. We're in New Orleans, and he's walking into his now former place of employment. And he, you know that Harry was this guy who was just like, finger guns, like everybody's buddy. Okay. Like he looks like a nice guy, even though he's a scumbag.
Exactly.
He's a scumbag job. And he's like Lola from NOLA. But it's not in like a creepy, like lecherous way. It just.
No, it's kind of reminding me of the copy guy on Saturday Night Live. You don't remember that? The skit?
Mm-mm.
Mitch, the Mitchinator, making copies. Rob Schneider.
No,
for your time, I'm making those little references to show that I'm old. Oh.
Sorry.
Yes.
But yeah, so he's walking in, pretending like he's gonna go up to his office, and this poor Lola has to like stop him.
And
but he knows that he can't go in.
Yeah,
this is all just a ruse to get Parker up there so she can get at his files, and. I like this, you know, she grabs the badge off the security officer when Harry starts making a fuss, and she goes and like gets in, and she on the elevator, I guess, changes. It's her favorite thing to do, change on an elevator. And mm-hmm. when she comes off, she's got these two lunch bags, and she tells the guy who's going down to talk to Harry that, oh, we're doing so lawyer stuff.
Discovery. It was something about discovery.
Yeah, 10 boxes to go.
Yeah, he was so excited because she was having lunch in the building and she's like, such and such for discovery. And he's like, good work.
I know, he's like, keep at it. But when she walks into Harry's office and finds it empty, I love that these bags are empty and she just smashes them together.
Cat sighting. For those of you who can't see what's happening, which is all of you really, There was a cat. There will be more cats.
There was a Leo sighting. She's the elusive one. So you got that on your bingo card. You cross it off. Exactly. Have you seen that they've got bingo cards that they put out for the different episodes?
No.
And on the Very Distinctive podcast, they kind of check things off for each episode. Have you listened or watched that yet?
No, I haven't gotten there yet. I'm so behind on like most everything, but I need bingo cards for sure.
Right? Okay, we'll talk about that at the end. Let's see. Oh, when he's talking with the guy, I can't think of his name, and he's like, oh yeah, you know, Fletcher Maxwell said you did this, you know, set him up or whatever. And he's like, Fletcher Maxwell, the guy who sold opiates to veterans that he knew mm-hmm. were highly addictive and then had fake art in museums around the world. And he's like, yeah, he said you were in on that too. What did he say? He says
something about, so now I'm a jaunty cat burglar who steals from the rich. And Lola's like, oh, that'd be cool. He's like, oh, it would.
I know, he like turns, he's like, right? It's so good. And I like Lola. I don't know if she's just a receptionist, right? Like she's not an evil person. And as they're talking, you see the wheels on her head and she's like, oh shit, these are bad people.
Oh yeah. Cause he's laying it on. He's like, then he says, I remember. And now you've done this and polluted waterways and the opiates and the building that killed the contractors.
Some foreshadowing. Yeah, I like that all of these, you know, and they're getting the files, which I think will also be a source of jobs later on for them. But it's some good foreshadowing for future episodes in this arc as well. And I like that he walks her through because his office is empty and she is complaining about it.
Oh, yes.
And also dragging him at the same time. They're all like, oh, yeah. He was horrible. He was a bad man.
He's all like, so I guess you've cleaned out the files from my office. I'm like, he's learning quick, this Harry. He's learning
how to do these comps.
And he's like, I bet you put the files behind that ugly horse painting. And then, of course, Parker,
she neighs at the horse. They said in the Very Distinctive podcast that painting was also used in the movie The Bad Samaritan, which was produced by Dean Devlin.
Oh. Okay.
And starred David Tennant. So, you know, there are some Doctor Who references in this episode. So, and I'm going to count that as one of the Doctor Who references, even though it's very roundabout.
The 10th Doctor is my favorite Doctor. But do carry on.
I do love the 10th Doctor. The 9th Doctor is, he's my guy, because he's what got me into it. And then it took me a while to come back for the 10th because I was like, I don't want anything to do with Barty Crouch Jr.
I know. Well, I remember that.
But he won me over.
We're not going to get into the trauma of having to lose doctors at this point.
No. No. We don't have time for that. This is a happy place because Leverage has come back to us.
Exactly.
I can't even think of what this man's name was that he's talking to, but he's like, I thought, you know, I remember when you wanted to change the world. And he says, the world did change. We just went along for the ride. And you're like, how do you sleep at night, sir? How do you sleep at night?
I don't know. I cannot answer that question.
No. And then outside, I like that I didn't notice it until my third viewing of it, but you see the back of a construction worker pulling up a manhole cover and like doing some work as Harry walks by. And Harry doesn't even look twice at them. And then a big black SUV pulls up and some guys get out and like want to rough him up and take him to see Mr. Maxwell. And then Elliot like, bam, out of nowhere, just like barrels into one guy, beats him up with his hard hat because he was the construction guy.
Yeah, that was mine. My note was Elliot with advanced hitter action.
Yes. It was just very Chekhov's gun. It's like, there he is, but you didn't know that it was him.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
And neither did Harry. Harry did not know.
No, that's the best part of it. That's how you know Elliot's good at his job. He's blended in to the point where even Harry doesn't notice.
Yeah. And I think it also, they're not telling Harry everything that they're doing because the trust isn't completely there yet, right? But he goes, he asks Elliot if he's the cavalry, and he's like, yeah, I guess you could say that, which is a reference to the bank shot job when he says, ma'am, I'd be the cavalry. He flips his hair. Love an Elliot hair flip. And then we get to go to what's going to become, spoiler alert, our new HQ, our new Leverage International, which is this amazing, just this huge space in New Orleans, like in the French Quarter.
It, like, I mean, it looks like a bar. There's a stage.
Right? It was like a bar venue.
Restaurant, who knows? But there is the stage is there. And of like course, the minute New Orleans pops up, I just start kind of dancing in my seat because I love me some New Orleans. So I am here for headquarters in NOLA.
Yes, I think it's a really interesting, I don't know, they've kind of like triangulated. I guess they started in California, though they never really.
I mainly remember Boston.
The first season was like California, but it wasn't like, they didn't use the location as a character, whereas Boston was really a character, and then Portland was really a character. And then New Orleans, like, there's no way you can have something set in New Orleans and not have it be a huge part.
At least you best not.
The show. Yeah. Or you're wasting your time if you were leaving out New Orleans as a character. Yeah. So. Oh, because then we get into ghosts in a little couple episodes, and yes. Oh, so excited. Okay. But at the new headquarters, Hardison's distracted and doesn't have the computer set up right away, and it's because he's working on some of their other jobs. Mm-hmm. And I really get the feeling that before they brought Sophie back on, they really weren't doing jobs like this very often. They were mostly doing, like, they were going around helping the other crews, and Hardison was, and, you know, doing, Elliot was doing the food trucks and helping veterans, and Hardison was doing this like insane humanitarian stuff that's above and beyond anything and should be what's going on now, but, you know. So this is really taking him away from that, whereas Parker and Elliot, like, they're kind of consulting and they can, it's not something they need to be hands-on. Hardison, who does like all the work all the time anyways and never sleeps, as far as we know, this is going to really spreading him thin. So Elliot, of course, is giving him advice that's couched in restaurant metaphors.
Absolutely. The head chef doesn't chop lettuce, man.
That's right. That's why restaurants fail.
That's how they fail.
Yeah. And we find out this headquarters, this beautiful building, was owned by a client of Harry's, and Parker asks if he was also a really bad man. And he's like, yeah, but I lost his case, so he went to jail. So yay me.
I love that. So yay me.
Elliot tells them that RIZ, yeah, were the guys who were trying to take Harry. So it's obvious that they're, Maxwell is still paying them somehow, So we got to find out where his money is. And luckily, we know a little man named Harry, and he's going to tell us where that money is. And it's his family's money. They've got an emergency fund that Harry's law firm helped them stash in Panama in this beautiful building.
It's gorgeous.
Just gorgeous. And I wonder, but that has to be like somewhere in New Orleans, because that's where they filmed, but...
You know, it could actually, I think I remember that spot. I can't put my finger on it, but the black and white tile, I hadn't even thought about that, but they could absolutely, I would have never questioned it in a minute, because it reminded me so much of some of the buildings where I studied in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And with that color, that light aqua color to the walls, the black and white tile floor.
But I
want to say I've actually been in that restaurant, now that I think about it, in New Orleans.
Oh, cool.
I'd have to think hard, but
yeah, there's not enough trivia out there yet of the like little tidbits on locations and stuff like that. So I'm ready for DVDs to come out so I can have some commentary, because the interviews that are coming out in Very Distinctive Podcast are really good, but I just need everybody.
You were talking about the building with the aqua, right? Or were you talking about the old
headquarters? I think that's the courthouse, because that's where Maxwell talks to the judge, which is also really beautiful. But the building where Corbett has his has the vault and everything has this like really like Art Deco.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's probably sandstone in the, outside.
Probably in the business district.
Yeah, might be. So, but this building, what in Panama, was owned by the U.S. government, and then they gave it back to Panama when they gave back the canal in 99. And let me be dumb for a second, but I didn't realize that we did not hand over the Panama Canal to Panama until 1999.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Or was it 1989? No.
You said 99.
But I remember. That was a deal. I want to say, let us not hold me to it because we're on Zoom and I'm not looking at Google. But I want to say that deal was brokered by Jimmy Carter.
It was 1999, December 31st. In accordance with the Torrijos-Carter treaties, so you're right about Carter, officially hands over control of the Panama Canal, putting the strategic waterway into Panamanian hands for the first time.
But of course, the CIA, being the CIA, had these safes in this building where they could lock important stuff up. I believe Hardison puts it as things that they don't want on American soil. He mentioned Roswell. He mentioned...
Of course he did.
Yeah, things like that. And of course, it's somewhere about in here that I realized that they're using an old school slide projector.
Yeah.
And it takes me a minute because then I realized that's why Elliot's like, Hardison, why are you set up the computers? And I'm like, oh my gosh, they're having to use a slide projector.
I know. I was like, because it does look like the ka-chink, 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 mm-hmm. slide, which where are you getting slides developed these days? Because you can get a very small projector and just an HDMI cord to your computer, your laptop. I do that all the time at work. But to go to the trouble of finding an old slide projector, getting the pictures, developing them on the little slides.
I don't know. I don't know. I was getting cracked up by that one though.
And then, of course,
them breaking out the brochures. That was.
Yes. Because the bad guys aren't in the shadows anymore. They're advertising this mm-hmm. with concierge service and cookies in the lounge. They name the specific drawer or cubby mm-hmm. that the Maxwells have their 20 million in, and it's drawer 5150 in one of the vaults. And there's two vaults, which I think is interesting that they mention. And I'll talk about it later why I'm like, But
this building did not actually exist.
Yeah. I can't remember if it was on IMDb or on the fandom wiki, but they said the 5150 might be a reference to Van Halen.
Yeah, there's a Van Halen album called 5150. Now, ironically, that is not the Van Halen album that has the song Panama on it. That's 1984. But to each their own, maybe Dean Devlin really likes some 5150.
Well, they needed a number.
So there you go.
There you go. And he passed away in 2020. So maybe it's also a little
nod, Eddie.
Yeah. But I didn't even think about the Panama connection.
Mm-hmm. Now you're going to be humming that for the rest of the
evening. It's definitely in my head now. Thank you. Definitely in my head. So luckily for our team, Maxwell needs permission from the Panamanian government before he can get at his money. But that's not going to take forever, so they really have to get down there. But they can't go until Sophie says it correctly.
Yes.
Barbara's like, what are we going to do?
We're going to steal.
And then she says it, and Harry is still so confused. But everybody, like, Parker does, like, a little jump shimmy. Yes. And Elliot, like, does his, like, look down smile thing, and Hardison just looks so proud and just ignores Harry. He's confused. Do you think that Elliot is less grumpy now? Like, he still has his damn it Hardison moments, but he also smiles and is just seems a lot more fond of everybody to me.
I think he is a little more fond of people in this one. Maybe Christian Kane, like all of us, was like, oh, good, friends.
I missed you guys. Yeah, no, they love each other. They love each other so much. Okay. So then we go to the building that you were talking about with the black, beautiful black and white tiles and the like aqua green walls, where Maxwell tries to bribe this judge.
And I was I can't believe you're calling him Ramos. Dude, I wouldn't even answer if I were him.
No, like, who's that?
Ramos.
Yes, Ramos. Yeah. And then immediately, like, he walks down the hallway and they come up the stairs.
Yep.
Here comes. As if they were, like, peering around the corner, which they probably were. Hardison and Sophie using some amazing Doctor Who references. Joe Grant and
Alistair
Lethbridge Stewart.
Yes.
Who were a companion and a military character who reappeared in a lot of episodes in the past and in sort of the current iteration of Doctor Who as well, including his daughter, which is very exciting. And they like have all this legalese that the judge is like, oh yeah, but that only is this. And then they're able to come back with something really quickly without having to ad lib. And that's because they have an evil lawyer on their side who can give them all the lingo. And John Rogers reminded everybody in this interview in the Very Distinctive podcast that anytime there's lawyer stuff, it's from Chris Downey because he used to be an evil lawyer.
Oh, okay.
He was like a corporate lawyer in his before he went into television life. And that's why it's so convincing.
Well done. Using his powers for good now.
Exactly. So they decide they're going to, okay, this, I don't think we mentioned it, but the building that the vaults are in, this ex-CIA intelligence guy, he's just a military intelligence guy named Corbett, found out about these vaults that are in the basement and bought the place. And now he, you know, owns the company with the brochures, but he rents out the ground floor and upper levels to local businesses as kind of cover, even though it's all the up and up and out in the open.
Oh, absolutely.
So that means that it's really easy for them to get a little mini headquarters right there under his nose because they find a small money laundering, small overseas law office that they, and they can prey on their fears and they walk in. And I love it. Harry is in his just linen blazer. Elliot's wearing Elliot clothes. Parker's in a cropped black hoodie with the hood up. And they have they have a metal trash can with them and they just start setting shit on fire. Telling all these people to get out.
That was the point where I was going to give Elliot an A+ with his los jefes nos enviaron. I'm like, oh, nice accent. You remember to put the pronoun in the right place. Well done.
Need a good translator for that. Yeah, and Parker's like, doesn't even try. She's just like, in the background, throwing things on the fire.
Harry's doing his thing, and Elliot's adding some more to it. And of course, things are literally on fire.
Yeah, and these people were, you know, as Elliot says, like, they live in fear of this all the time. So they're like, I knew this was going to happen. And they're happy to leave as soon as possible. And then it flips back to the courthouse. Hardison and Sophie are coming down the stairs and he's like, wow, that was great. You were just, you know, just like you never stopped. And I love this. She sits down and takes off her high heels and switches them out with some flats, which I'm like, yes, mwah. You can tell that there's a woman running the show now.
Yeah.
Because that's what you want to do. You don't want to walk around in your heels all day. You use them to make a statement and then put on some comfortable shoes.
And like she gives
pulling Mr. Rogers.
you know, you can tell she's tired. And
yeah,
she says, but I can't work forever, can I? And there's a lot in that. There's so much in that scene. I made a note of that as well.
So much.
Loaded, and the shoes coming off is almost a metaphor.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is very, it's all her, it's because she's still grieving, right? It's only been a year since she lost Nate. And when she's doing the job, like she says, she's like, I can pretend to be who I was back then. Mm-hmm. But then the minute you like stop doing that, you go back, it all comes back to you, right? And yeah, you're right. The shoes, taking the shoes off is a metaphor. Totally. And Hardison, and later there's a scene with Hardison and Parker where it's obvious that they've forgotten that she doesn't want to do this forever again, you know?
Yeah.
And so they have these moments where they're like, oh, she is planning on not staying with us. Like, I thought we had her back. Isn't she having as much fun as we are? Mm-hmm. And then just these moments where they're like, oh, and I don't know how to help make her better, because this is how I'm trying to help. And
yeah.
If it doesn't work, I don't know what else to do. So that's really hard. Also, I shouldn't have mentioned it in the first one, but it was like something that I noticed as I was watching. When she's on the con, she wears all sorts of different things for her different characters that she's playing. But when she's just Sophie, she's wearing all black the entire 8 episodes. So she's like, not just like sad. She's like in Victorian mourning.
Yeah.
So though in Victorian era, she would have been allowed to wear some purple at this point.
Yeah. Because
it's been a year.
Not quite to the gray, right? Or is it not the gray?
I think we could do like a dark gray or like have some hints of purple, but that would be about it. And a dark purple, I think. We're not talking lilacs and lavenders here.
No, clearly. No. No, I say as if I know more about Victorian stuff than what I garnered from reading romances.
So. I know. I was like, that's a lot of mine. And like, I guess a history degree. But, you know, why did I pursue history? Because I loved historical fiction. That's
I did read Death and Mourning in Victorian times for fun. Never mind.
There you go. You are speaking with some authority. That sounds like a good book, by the way.
Oh, to see the look on my young face when I discovered they had those little bells in case somebody were buried alive and they tugged the string and the bell jingled.
Yes.
That's some creepy stuff right there.
Some super creepy stuff. And I mean, if you've ever been on a ghost tour in New Orleans, they have a lot of creepy death stuff as well. Because the dead don't like to stay buried in New Orleans because they're at sea level. And so they have crypts and the people burn up in the crypts. They like cook.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the year, they go in and like just sweep the ashes back and then put more people in.
The bones and put more people in.
What? Wild, wild. And I love that people are like, yep, we're just going to keep living here.
It's bizarre.
It's a magical place.
I love the place.
Yeah. Okay. So
we're to Elliot throwing
produce. Back to people not being dead and not mourning. Yes. Elliot buys one. I put my quotes in my notes. Elliot buys one, parentheses written out, one orange from a street vendor. And then he hears a distinctive sound, which is a very distinctive sound. He turns around, he sees a drone, and he just, we know he's a great baseball player from the one time he played baseball and was very successful. And he like knocks it out, and then he picks it up and it's a tiny drone, but that sound is super distinctive. My dad has just gotten into drones.
Ah.
And his is quite a bit bigger, but it sounds like just lots of angry mosquitoes trying to get you. It's cool, but kind of creepy at the same time. And they notice that one of Elliot's food trucks is around the corner, but it's not one that he
had sent for.
Thank you. It was like ordered, had delivered. And they go up to it, and Elliot makes this motion at Hardison to like cover the back door, but then Hardison does not cover the back door. He just follows him to the front door, and he opens the front door, and it's Brianna.
Hey.
Which, you know, if you've been excited about the show coming, you know that's Brianna. You knew the minute you saw a drone follow them in headquarters when they first left, yep. which we yep. didn't mention. Sorry, that was on me. But she's, I love Elise Shannon. Like, I'll be saying it every episode. But she's so good. I love her. I love her so much. So good.
So good. Especially in a couple of scenes that are coming up.
Oh my gosh. Yes. So she, you know, he's like, Brianna. And Sophie, obviously, I guess, has never met her. She's like, isn't he this year? And he's like, yeah, my foster sister. And then, so good. But then I assume that Elliot knows her because she also knows Parker. And they bring her in and she kind of gives her excuses that she's tired of these day gigs that she's been doing. And she wants it on the fun. And she tracked them down using skills that Parker taught her when she was 11. So hasn't she earned it?
And Parker's like, I teach every kid I meet how to do crime. Crime is fun.
Crime is fun. And she nods. She's like, yeah, it is. And Elliot immediately is like, head chef, lettuce chopping. Like,
yes.
You know, he's like, this will work for us. This can be good. But Hardison is just like, does Nana know where you are? If I call her up, she's like, oh, I think she's napping. And they're quipping back and forth is so good. Like the chemistry is really good. They do feel very brother-sister relationship. And she's like, don't call her, please. Like, just don't.
Mm-hmm.
And he's on the fence. His mind's made up. He's down. But Parker grabs Hardison by the ear and like marches him into a side office and then shoves him up against a wall.
No.
Like, she has a lot of feelings. And she's not okay with this because she thinks that Brianna is normal. She even is like, she has one of those things. What are they? The papers that have your name on them?
And Hardison's like, a birth certificate.
She's like, yes, and it has her real name on it.
And then they go into this great couple kind of shorthand. Don't you remember that time in Paris, the explosions, the robot, the granny bot? It's just like they're going back and forth speaking in this shorthand.
Yes. Which, you know, just speaks to that's such a good relationship. Just, mm-hmm. This is how well they know each other. This is how much history they have. And also that history includes Elliot. Cause they're like, and Elliot, you didn't want to upset Elliot, but you didn't want to agree with me and blah, blah, blah. So Elliot was there on vacation with them, obviously. So that's just a OT.
Oh, the vacation's later. That was the Paris job.
Oh yeah, you're right. I think I was reading like a meta that was like, this was obviously a vacation. I was like, sure. Okay.
Job. There was an
explosion. No, they said job. No, she says that time in Paris.
Oh, that's right.
It's just like that time in Paris. So she doesn't say it's a job and she doesn't say it's a vacation. So then I think it's up for interpretation.
Yes.
But regardless, you know, he says, I trust you and your judgment. I'm leaning no, but you know, whatever you think is right. And she steps back and she tugs down her little cropped hoodie and he's like, you're not mad. You did the Picard tug.
I am mad.
And he's like, you did the tug. You know I like that. Which is our second Star Trek reference in a row. And two episodes. Love it. There will be more. Don't worry, everybody. So they go out and, you know, they're like, okay, you can stay, but you have to. It's nothing. It's only going to be computer stuff. It's only going to be behind the scenes. Yeah, one job. And but back before when she's talking about, she's like, I'm not as good of a hacker as you. And he's like, damn sure you're not. She's like, but hacking's kind of old school.
Yeah.
And anybody can do it. Yeah. I have more relevant skills.
Like and
Elliot's
media.
Behind her. Elliot's behind her. And this is after she already said, you know, I've
all those times you saved Elliot's life.
Yes. And he's like, what? But he's gotten past that. And when she like has the dig about relevant skills, his face behind her, he's like, ooh, like, ouch. That like gets him where it hurts for real. So Brianna's on getting them access to the building, security, full control. And Harry gets them a tour of the facility. And Elliot's like, yes, this is a great idea, because if we get clocked as thieves, they'll just shoot us. But Harry reads like a fed, so they'll torture him first. And that'll give us time to rescue him. Yeah. And Harry's suddenly questioning why he's doing this. He's like, tortured? What? Then we see Corbett and Maxwell, and Corbett's not letting Maxwell add his stuff. He's like, it's my money. And he said, yeah, cool. You still have to follow the rules so that I don't get in trouble doing all my, you know, yeah, exactly. I have to follow the rules here so I can keep doing illegal stuff.
Yeah, you can't cut corners. You paid me a lot of money. You're not cutting corners here.
Yeah. So then he immediately turns around and tries to bribe his second in command, Diego.
As one does. He
asks to meet him. Yes. I can't believe it took him this long. He obviously has his phone number, so he might have tried something with this earlier. But Harry gets a tour for his client from Taiwan, who's going to bring a bunch of gold, a bunch of gold bars. Mm-hmm. And they get the classic real-time tour, and then like cuts back and forth to Harry filling in the team about everything. And I don't know if we want to go into all the stuff, but you know, there's all these like reasons why it's so safe. There's only one entrance. It's
seismic sensors and
it's a manual safe. It's, you know, CCTV. There's a fail safe from the Philippines where they check, and every day there's a different passcode and all sorts of stuff that'll make it hard. But as they're going through it, you know, they're troubleshooting. They're like, okay, so mechanical is easier, it just takes longer, so they'll have to do this, and like, oh, we can just drill through and then we can see, and that'll take less time. But the seismic sensors, and you know, they're like, oh, this is, somebody says, oh, Hardison says something, but nothing is impossible, to which Parker immediately is like, it's impossible to tickle yourself. And he's like, that's true. And then 2 seconds later, as they're talking about something else, Brianna goes, it's impossible to dribble a football.
And nobody even acknowledges that.
No, Hardison like points at her. He's like, yeah. And Parker nods. Oh, and goodness. Nobody else, like the normal people, don't say anything. but I just thought that was another, because we know that Aldous Hodge is going to be in every episode. It was like really fun to see, oh, there's going to be a person here who's going to have like a little weirdness, so Parker's not by herself, you know. Yes. and will be funny, meaning like trying to be funny and not just situationally funny. So I just really like that. And it was also like the three of them have a good banter. So they're going to need something that's going to set off the seismic sensors so that them drilling a hole down from their floor won't be noticed. So they talk about there's an empty nightclub next door, but they don't have time to throw a concert. So Brianna also is like, and you know, she's afraid to step up and give an idea. But Sophie's like, no, let's hear it. And she says EDM. And this is where I love the show so much. Instead of making a joke about what's EDM,
they just go with it.
They were just like, oh, Harry's like, oh, my daughter loves that stuff. And they just look at him like he's weird. And the joke isn't, I don't know what these letters mean, which I think a lot of shows would do. It's the easy low hanging fruit. And, but Brianna's like, yeah, one of my jobs is a promoter.
Concert promoter or something like that.
Yeah. So all you, working for a concert promoter. And for EDM, all you have to do is hype it and they'll come. Like, you don't have to plan things. Like, I feel like you do still have to plan some stuff, but okay. But apparently it's an overnight thing. And they are going to guilt trip a DJ and get a club, and they're going to have this concert. And I love how we did the accent earlier, how they guilt trip this cormorant.
Yeah.
Pomerat, who is obviously a, oh man, I just forgot the DJ's name.
Mouse something, isn't it? Mouse.
Dead Mouse. Hang on. Oh,
I just closed down my Safari, so I've lost all my links.
I know, I have it. I have it. Hang on. Oops. We'll cut this out. Yes. Oh, I was right. Yeah. So the mask and just the whole name and everything are definitely a reference to Dead Mouse, who also has
the helmet,
a mouse thing. But they're claiming that Komarat is doing a private performance for a man who's destroying the habitat of the Panamanian spider monkeys, which are a thing. There are Panamanian spider monkeys,
and they made sure to show them to us. They showed the Panama Canal, and they showed us some spider monkeys, so we would be prepared.
They're like, so you know, that's where we are.
Monkeys, canal.
And nothing else is gonna be there. Did you know there's also a squirrel monkey in Panama? It doesn't resemble a squirrel, but it is the smallest.
Monkey. A squirrel monkey.
Squirrel monkey.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm gonna look it up.
I noticed we are not trying to save the squirrel monkey. I bet it's not as cute.
Oh, how could it not be? It's small. Okay. Oh, my internet just went out on my computer. Come back.
Maybe it's just the squirrel thing.
Central American squirrel. It's very cute.
Okay. I take it back.
It's very cute. Oh no, it's so cute. It's like goldeny yellow. Well, goldeny browny yellow, and it has like a little white face.
Aw, you're right. It is cute.
Little Eddie Munster hair.
Kind of reminds me of Marcel from Friends.
It does look like a
capuchin.
I never knew how to say that.
Pronounce words with Steve and Sally. That's more likely how not to pronounce words with Sally. That's more accurate.
Sorry. Robot. So, yes. They guilt trip him into being their performer. And because he's a big fan of animals, he's the biggest fan. That's where he wears a rat face. Of course. And
this outfit Sophie has, though, that's my favorite. I'm like, if I were running a con, I definitely want the scarf, the t-shirt, the jeans, the nose ring. That's where I need to be for a con.
She looks super comfy.
Right.
I love it. And it's perfect because it does feel very granola, very activist-y. Mm-hmm. And she is so good. I know she's an actress, but Gina Bellman playing Sophie, playing other people, like that's a lot of levels.
It's great. Well, and of course, we've started rewatching Coupling, so extra Gina Bellman for us.
Yeah, is that like blow your mind?
Yeah,
she's like an infant.
Yeah, and Jane is a completely different character from Sophie, like,
yeah,
on another plane.
So funny. So we see Corbett in his office on his computer. Also, I love that this man runs this very discreet business, and he must make a lot of money keeping this stuff safe for people, but he has like this shitty little office.
Right?
It's like really cramped. Why don't you use one of the larger office parts of this building that you rent out to other people and make it look nice and posh? Because where's the concierge service? Where are the cookies? I don't see that. Anyways, he's looking at, it almost looks like a streaming, like it almost looks like Twitch.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Dead Mouse logo. And then on the side, you can kind of see people who are live or people who are chatting or something. And then Diego comes in and puts some flyers down as well. And we also see that that's also for Komarat. So you're like, oh no, he's on to them. He's going to be angry.
Mm-hmm.
And then Brianna's upstairs, super excited. She's working on this project and she's focused.
Swag bags.
I got Red Bull on the line for swag bags. I think 22,000 you know, hits, distinct hits on our website, and she doesn't want to go home yet. So Sophie's like, come on, I remember you used to get like this about the cons too, your first con, so let's go. And she's still working, and somebody comes to the door, and she doesn't even look up. She's like, I don't need a babysitter, thank you. And she's like, but it's Corbett.
He's like, your boss around, and then she does this sassy twirl in her chair.
It's so good. She's like, yeah, let me go get her. Spins around in her chair, and she's like, hi, why are you bothering my employees? She was meant for leverage. She's perfect. I love her. And when does the switch come? Oh, she, you know, he's like grilling her on, you know,
he doesn't believe her. He's like,
he doesn't believe her at first because she's like, oh, it's a benefit for the monkeys.
Yes.
And she distracts him for a second and puts the headset in. And instead of walking her through it like Hardison wants her to do, Sophie just gives her the rundown on this guy. She's like, he doesn't believe that anybody would do anything out of the goodness of their heart. So he's not going to believe this at all. So you have to get on his level. And
she immediately, Brianna,
seamlessly, after she like blinks at him for a minute, which I think is hilarious. Yeah, she's like, you got me, man. It's, you know, I got him for free. The tickets are paying my bills, and everything else is profit that goes through my charity. She names some number charity, and she's like, none of the money goes back to the monkeys, and nobody cares, not the concert goers, not the state, the country of Panama, who respects my privacy.
Right, who stays out of my business, and now I'd like for you to do the same.
Exactly. And that, like, he's like, oh, okay, this is somebody who's just trying to make a buck and be an asshole. So I get it. And then there's the twist, because there's like the tension builds. Is he going to buy this? Is he going to buy this? And then it twists and he says, oh, I'm the hugest fan of Komarat.
I love Komarat.
I love him. He's like, don't I love him? Diego's like, the boss loves Komarat.
Well, it was the best, because he goes, he loves the Komarat.
The Komarat. And he's like, I saw him before he got big in Detroit, we saw him in Paris, we saw him in, and he's like, I even saw him in Tokyo. What were we doing in Tokyo? And he's like, makes a little gun thing,
and
he's
then like,
the Corsican, there was a, well, whatever, yeah, we saw him in Tokyo. And she's like, that's cool, man, do you want tickets? He goes, in the meantime, they've turned around, sped back, yeah, to check on her and save her.
He snaps right back though, because he's all with it, and he's like, I admire your hustle. I found out you're lying to me though. I'm going to come back and shoot you in the face. Save me two tickets.
And she's like, okay. But she handled it so good. And Parker still freaked out. She's like, that's it. We're pulling her. She's going home. And Sophie's like, no. She's like, she's like, I agree. She's a little overzealous, but that's how you were when we went, had that Serbian orphanage job and the stork job. Mm-hmm. And Parker's like, fork. He stabbed a man with a fork. And she's like, and I don't even want to talk to you about the Iceman.
And then we get.
He brings back the accent.
It brings back the accent. That has to be on the bingo card, right?
Yes, it has to be, right?
Actually, it was Hardison takes on an accent. Take a drink. I was going to make a drinking game out of it.
Ooh, I feel like John Rogers would really approve of that. Something's distinctive. Elliot says, damn it, Hardison.
Yes, yes.
I like it. So, but yeah, so she, and then she also says, and I know I'm not going to be here, like, this is my last job, but I think that she's going to need a shoekeeper. And then you see Parker's brain just go, because she, like I said earlier, has now forgotten that Sophie doesn't plan on staying. And Hardison also is like, oh, that's right, I don't like this. Mm-hmm. And they're sad. But then the next day, we've got Elliot and Hardison going to set up the drill, and we get great banter. Great Elliot banter.
And his, yeah, buddy.
Elliot telling Artisan Matt, you could cut up all your fingers with this drill and they'd be all across the room. And then how would you pick up your fingers with no fingers?
If you do that, don't come crying to me.
And I noticed that Hardison has orange Chucks on here. I haven't seen any orange soda so far. Maybe he's taking better care of himself, but he does have orange Chucks.
Orange Chucks. But and then he holds up his hands. He's like, Elliot's like, are you going to help me with this drill? He's like, no, got to keep these hands safe. These are precious instruments.
So good. And then he goes over and he's obviously in the middle of a different project because he's been spray painting these gold, fake gold bars, and Harry is looking at them and he asks, why is this one so much lighter? And he's like, oh, because that's plastic explosive. And he's like, what? It could go off. But no, and he has a trigger detonator thing and, you know.
You have to call it. And this.
To call it. And he's like, well, I'm just one wrong number away from being blown up. I'm a little worried about that. And he's like, yeah, but you'd only be worried for like a tenth of a second and then you wouldn't have to worry anymore, which does not help Harry.
No, no.
And he's very nervous later on. But I think that also is very, I couldn't decide if it speaks to the impulsive side of, I don't know, Hardison being like ADHD, and also your life as a criminal means you could lose your life at any time.
I think it has to do with like character growth,
mm-hmm.
and maybe being used to these sorts of things. Cause I can totally see Hardison being on the other end of that conversation earlier in the series where Elliot's spray painting the gold bars or whatever. And Hardison knows he's going to be the one riding in the van, mm-hmm.
and sweating like, bullets.
I got a problem with that. And Elliot,
that's true.
You would only have a tenth of a second. And then you wouldn't have any other problems again.
I like that too, as character growth and also confidence in their own.
I think abilities. A lot of it's confident.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But also like a little disregard for your own safety. Which, I think these are all together make you a good thief. So, and maybe the high of knowing something could happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's why a lot of people do things like this. There's the adrenaline rush of not getting caught, or like maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, playing with fire.
Because I don't like that feeling.
No,
I don't want to do that.
My favorite things, but
don't want to do that.
Some people like it.
That's right. So then we see Maxwell negotiating with Diego, and Diego's like, "Why don't I just turn you in to Corbett, and your body washes up in the canal?"
Well, he's like 20%, and Diego's like, counteroffer.
You die. And he's like, okay, yeah. okay.
40%. Ah, 40, now like, you're thinking. Dang. Now you're thinking.
Diego's good at this. So he eventually agrees, and he'll let him in to get his stuff when Corbett goes to the show later that night. So I liked this pass by in the airport, and I wonder if they just did not have this set for very long. And it just helps move things faster.
Smooth. It was just so smooth. Sophie picking up Comrade, and there that goes. And here comes Harry to get and Corbett to get the gold. It was just a very nice transition.
It was. And they load up the stuff. Let's see what else. Elliot and Hardison are setting up the drill and getting ready. And Hardison's on his phone again, like being distracted. And Elliot, like, and this also, I think, is very indicative of how much they've grown and how mm-hmm. much time they've spent together and their relationship, where he says, you know, in our line of work, you're one of the best. But in that line of work, you're the only. Mm-hmm. You're the only person who can do what you're doing. And then he says, tells him it's okay to grow up. It's not a bad thing. And he's like, well, what about you?
You never grew up.
And he says, well, I achieved perfection early, didn't I? And instead of like rolling his eyes or like being like, oh, whatever.
Uh-huh.
He just is like, you know, he's not like, that's right, you're perfect. But he doesn't scoff. And no. I mean, it's clear he's also thinking about other stuff. But. And then Brianna So it's just like awkward, like, you know what? I'm not good at saying thank you. Which also felt very like, we're going to die. Mm-hmm. You know, like, please don't say thank you right before we start this job. Because now I'm like, oh gosh, how is this going to end? Harry is with Corbett and his goons and is very nervous.
Yeah, pothole.
jerks. Everyone's freaking out. And then Corbett gives his evil speech of evil about, hey, like, you know, I work for these bad people, but if keeping them their stuff here so they can just retire in the south of France, I'm really saving lives if you look at it this way. And he's like, yes, you're providing a public service.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Sure you are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If that's what you have to tell yourself to sleep at night. Sophie has Comrat start his sound check and like he's not getting loud enough.
So she has to.
She's like, this is horrible, but turn it up. Oh, sorry. Parker gets into her beloved vents. She's so excited to be back in another vent. Meanwhile, Harry's gold. Yeah. I know she loves her vents. Harry's gold gets stored. Corbett goes off to meet Comrat, but and Maxwell shows up and Harry's like, oh gosh, Maxwell's coming. Corbett didn't get the tickets ahead of time.
Go to the concert.
I think he went upstairs to get a ticket.
Oh.
That's what I thought he might have done. Or not upstairs, it's just there on the first floor. And he sees Elliot and Hardison, and Elliot has to go fight him. And Elliot gets knocked down.
I know. Close to the diamond drill that could.
Yeah, and we're all freaked out. And Hardison's like, what the hell? And he's like, keep drilling. But then he kicks him. And I thought that was really cool from the ground. And then he's fighting. And I mean, he does take Corbett down. But he calls Diego. And
so Diego's headed to at this point, I don't even know how we're supposed to cover all of this because it's just
bam. I know, I'm just like bullet points.
Yeah, like
Maxwell's pissed because he's telling him to leave. And he gets on the elevator.
But Brianna steps the elevator, but she can't hold it off forever. So then Elliot's like, how do we get there? And Hardison just gives him the stare. And Elliot's like, not that. And that's when we get our, damn it, Hardison.
Because yes,
he has to go in the vents.
Right. Then Manila calls and they need the daily code. And Brianna has been very cocky about knowing it, but that she doesn't know it. And it's Granada, it's pomegranate. Her hilarious accent is very hilarious.
Yes.
And Hardison has successfully drilled through that he drops the camera down so he can see the backside of the
tumbler. It's the
tumblers. Oh, okay. When they start drilling and the seismic sensors go off with the sound, this is my question for you. The guards in the booth, they're looking, it like comes up and they're like, oh, it's, what do they say? Let me see if I can find it. Oh yeah. They say Es la musica. And then they say La Comrat. I was like, why would it be La? Comrat is a man.
That did catch.
But I was like, what is rat?
Raton. El Raton. Well, so, and Diego says he loves the Comrat earlier. But I get that in English. I mean, it could be like, I mean, there are all these words like El Vestido. I mean, it's a dress, but it's masculine. It just has to do with the word.
Yeah.
But
it's not Spanish at all. And it's weird that it's just La.
That's the part that threw me off. I was like, why the La if it's kind of a made up word or it's an English word?
Yeah. I mean, they wouldn't say La Cher if Cher was downstairs, right? They would just say
Esta Cher.
Yeah.
Que sorpresa. Cher is cocky.
And she's singing Fernando. Okay. All right. So I don't think that person actually spoke Spanish is what my thought is.
Now, that said, there may very well be some rule that I do not remember because it's been many years. And there are many finer points of grammar, but I'm with you. That just didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I don't think so. If you, dear listeners, if you disagree or, you know, what the rule is, please tweet us.
Edumacate us.
Yes. All right. But
Elliot's in the vent.
Elliot's in the vent. Also, he comes around this corner real hard. He like smacks into the side of the vent and he's disgusted by how dirty it is in the vent as well. Which I was reading something on like a Tumblr post about it, because in a minute it is very much referenced that Parker, like they all train in each other's specialties. And we know that Parker has vents at home because they're not enough anymore, the ones that Hardison made for her. So, and in the past, whenever Hardison had to be in a vent, he was always complaining about his allergies and how dusty they were. So the person writing this post was just like, this just tells me that Parker keeps the vents at home really, really clean because she wants the boys to train in them and she wants it to be a good experience so that Hardison can't complain about it. And that's why Elliot is so disgusted. He's like, don't they ever clean these? Because he's used Parker to a higher quality vent.
Parker loves the vent so much that she probably just scrubs all around in them, you know?
Yeah.
If you're using them, how's the dust going to settle?
She wears these little things. Yeah, all over her body. The little
full body suit.
Yeah, of the like little, you guys couldn't see, but the
yeah, it's a little dust.
Those little duster shoes that you wear, and they have little noodles on the end of them.
Yes, yeah. She wears a full body suit of duster noodles, and then does cat cow in the in the vent in order to cat cow position. Little down dog, no room for down dog. A little up dog in there, gets the belly on the floor. Yeah, you know.
Here we go. Oh my gosh.
Why we're doing yoga and Vince, I don't know.
Parker.
Yeah,
that's Parker. All you have to say.
That fits, yeah.
And he says, I hate the stupid vents. And she's like, how can you hate the vents? The vents are the best part. So Parker gets down. The CCTV cameras are off. She opens up the vault with Hardison's help. And Elliot takes care of the guards.
Yeah,
but then
she's like, I smell lasers. How do you smell lasers? Then she goes on this whole thing about ginger and cinnamon. And
oh, they're ozone-y and cinnamon-y.
Ozone-y and cinnamon-y.
Yeah. Did I Google, can you smell lasers? Yes. And I did not come up with anything good. So well, that might Parker, just be a Parker thing. Yeah. And then so Hardison obviously can adjust the spectrums on which the camera sees, and he sees the lasers, they're not in the visible spectrum, and he wants her to just walk away, and she's like, no, you're gonna walk me through it, I told you to practice your burglary skills. And he's like, oh, don't compare me, or he says, don't compare me to Elliot, and Elliot's like, don't bring me into this,
while he's fighting people, while he's in the middle of fighting people.
So great. So then she, you know, he walks her through and she does some gymnastics. And he's also like mirroring things, and he like cracks his back and like pulls his groin at the same time.
Oh, that one, though, he's like, you know, that one time on vacation, that split. And I'm like, whoa, guys.
It's a lot. Whoa. It's a little personal right there. And she just like smiles and does it immediately.
Like, I got it. I don't got it. And then his back cracked. And I was like, Hardison, I have never felt you more than in this moment. I should have an ice pack on my back right now.
So she's in, she like disables the lasers and she gets the bonds. They're bearer bonds, I think.
Bearer bonds, yes.
And she's like, that was easy. And then from behind her, she hears Maxwell say, for the amount of money they charged me to keep this stuff here, it should have been impossible. She turns around and he's got a gun on her, of course. And it's like the fade to commercial music.
Of course.
And when it comes back, you know, they're still standing there. And like, she kind of smiles.
Smiling.
Because I got an Elliot. There's an Elliot there, and he whips around, he disarms him, and instead of him hitting Maxwell, she like throat chops him from behind.
Man, I was waiting for a Miss Piggy judo chop.
And he's knocked right out. I want to know what that move is called, but I didn't know how to look it up. So what, I haven't done that.
Wait, which one? Because I made a note earlier.
The move that where she went, that she hit him with.
Oh, okay. Earlier I was like, Parker's doing an entrapment.
She is. She was. Or he does it in Ocean's 12.
Ocean's, yeah.
Yeah, the French guy. And she's done it as well before, but you know, not with somebody walking her through it. And Elliot, after she's knocked him out, he's like, see, you don't always need the taser. And she's like, but I like the tasers. Then they're on the run because people have started to recover and they escape into the club. And then they automatically think that she's hiding it, even though there were several people, that she's hiding in the Comerat outfit. Yeah. So they just pull it off. This man
pulls it off and it's this redhead.
It's this redheaded man who's not angry that he's been unmasked. He's just like, he just stands there. I'm like, you're a very bad extra, sir. Your whole shtick is your anonymity.
Can I just get a little hey or something?
Yeah, like try to grab it back. Like, come on. An emotion would be great. Oh, also when they are making a run for it, it's just very like, Keystone Cops, they're like, oh, well, no, it's
turning. It kind of reminded me of Clue, you know, where they're running through the house, only with Panamanian music.
Yeah. And Hardison comes limping out and she's like, you didn't stretch before, did you? He has to like take a breather before they run into the club.
Same Hardison, same.
So Corbett realizes like Maxwell is there and he's like, why are you here? And then it flips to, they just like went straight through the club and got into the food truck, which is such great cover. Like no one's going to check the food truck. So good. And I didn't notice it until like this third time, but Hardison's like, hey, Brianna, like I need you outside. And they're all kind of happy. And they ask, you know, or Harry asks, like, why did we bother to plant the gold with the bomb if we weren't going to use it? And so he's like, oh,
they all just give him a look. And the next thing you know, he's making a phone call. It's like his initiation ceremony or something.
Right. And I think this is the closest we get to the gloat in this episode.
Yeah. This one doesn't have the usual gloat, but yeah, he's just basically calling, who's paying the bills? You might want to make a call, see who's making the bills. See who's paying the bills.
So he calls RIZ and they've changed their number.
Apparently.
Because his call triggers the bomb.
And it's all blown up.
Yeah. So everything, okay. And this is what I was thinking about earlier. Because they said when they were talking about the building that there are two vaults, like one on either side of the building. Mm-hmm. And only one of the vaults was destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I wonder if
everything in vault one was destroyed.
Yeah. But then in a second, so, you know, they're like, all right, so now we have to run because the people who have the stuff in that vault are the most powerful psychopaths in the world. Like one of them has nukes.
Three of them have armies.
Three of them have armies. One of them has nukes. And so they need to run for the rest of their lives, which is why we can't have a gloat because they're gone. But I'm like, well, what about all the people who have stuff in vault number two?
I guess they're never so well.
I don't know. So yeah, and Sophie says we don't leave loose ends ever, which I don't think is true, but they try not to. Then Hardison asks Harry for help, and he's like, anything, anytime. And then it immediately switches to, they've obviously just come back from having gumbo.
Yes. Because Brianna's like, gumbo should be its own food group.
Oh, I love gumbo. But when they come back in, like it's been completely renovated and transformed, the headquarters, and it's so beautiful. And somebody's like, are those Eames chairs? And I was like, they are. Oh my gosh. They're beautiful. And they would have been very expensive. And there's a punching bag in the corner for Elliot, and there's a full bar, and later we'll find out that there's rooms that they're living in upstairs.
Ah, so nice.
so nice. And there's the stage with the curtain with all the screens.
Screens.
Which, and there's a stage, and that'll come up later, a stage for Sophie.
Aww.
And really high ceilings for Parker. Okay, before we go into what happens next, which is a little emotional, I also saw a post of someone talking about, and I had noticed it when they came in, Parker's outfit here. She has like, she's a black sweater on, but like she's got this black and white and yellow skirt, like long kind of pleated flowy skirt, which is very different than things that she's worn in the past. And they were like, this is just a sign that, you know, she feels comfortable and she doesn't need to be like, have like work clothes on all the time.
Mm.
And I thought that was really interesting. And I also just really like that outfit. It's a cute look. But this was another instance where I felt Elliot in the past would have been different. Cause he's like, he asks Parker, did you know about this? And she's like, no. And he goes, I like it. And it's not a begrudging, oh yeah, I guess it's okay. Mm-hmm. Or I'm angry that you bought another piece of property and didn't tell us, like the brew pub. He just immediately is approving. Oh, that's growth. I love it.
I know, but it's the same Elliot. Hold that thought.
Yeah.
One more thing he does that amuses me, but we're not there yet.
Okay. and he also, our partisan's like, yeah, it was the least I could do.
The least I could do. And everybody's like, uh-oh.
Yeah. And Parker's like, what?
Say, huh?
And she, you know, grabs him and, or she walks off and he follows her. And Harry's still like, did I miss something?
Yeah. And Sam, and Sophie's like, family things.
It's family business. And she asks where he's got to go because she knows. She knows. And he tells her he has to go to Sri Lanka. And if he doesn't, there'll be a total economic collapse there. And so she's like, great. So if I want you to stay, then I'm pro-famine. Yes. Oh. And you can tell it's really hard for her to let him go, but she knows it's the right thing to do. But she also tells him, take Brianna. Like, don't leave her with me. I'm not. In a second, she says, I'm not a mom.
A parent.
But he tells her that he finally got a hold of Nana. And she said that the FBI came to her door, which she's used to because of Hardison.
It wasn't for me.
Yeah, but it wasn't for her. For him, it was for Brianna. And she's been getting into all the things that he was doing, like ransomware attacks and credit card fraud.
We're talking about the DOD when they're...
Yep, DOD incursions. Yeah. And she's like, just like you were into. And he's like, yeah, until I found you. So he's like, so no, I'm going to leave these here with you. And if you say you're not a mom, there's like a dozen crews around the world that would disagree with you. And she's like, well, I am pretty great.
She is. I am kind of awesome, or I am awesome, or something like that.
No. That's good. You should know your worth, Parker.
Exactly.
And then Sophie's like, well, this is a really great, you know, reunion concerts, but like my time's over. And then we keep going with this music theme because we are kind of like a music venue.
Reunion concert. And she's like, how about limited engagement?
Yeah, he wants it to be a reunion tour. And she says, how about limited engagement? Which in the first episode, they're like, no encores. So that's like kind of a mirror of the very beginning of the show too. And she's like, well, okay. Like, it does not take long. It's not really hard to convince her. And, you know, they're also like, what's the first rule? Brianna says,
surprise is fun.
And Harry also, oh, they all say different things to her. You know, Elliot says the reunion tour thing. Parker and Brianna say, you know, crime is fun and we could use the help. And Harry says, you know, I don't know you very well, but you do seem happier when you've got someone on the strings.
Yeah.
And so like all of that. So when, you know, when I say it doesn't take much, it's like, oh, it takes five people telling her that they need her there. So, and you know, and also, and in my head, I'm like, you can't turn down sitting on an Eames chair. Like, come on, I want to sit on one.
Yeah. Right.
And then Harry also wants to be part of things. And they're like, oh, you got the bug, didn't you? And he's like, it's not the rush, though I do really like that. It's that thing that Hardison was talking about earlier, that process of redemption. And it's not just that bad guys are doing things in the shadows.
They don't just cheat. Now they've rewritten the laws and I can help you like get around it.
Yeah. Let me be your inside man.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets really excited and he wants disguises and windbreakers and beards and accents. And she's like,
they're just looking at him like, what?
Not so fast. And we haven't talked about Sophie calling him our Mr. Wilson yet.
Oh, I miss that.
She really starts in this episode and she like passes Jess and walks up. She's like slow your roll, our Mr. Wilson. But she, yeah, that's a thing that she calls him throughout this whole little arc.
Well, and as
they're like a pet.
When they're busting it up, when they're kind of breaking up after this, we get the aerial shot. Elliot looks over, sees Brianna's drinking, scowls at her and takes it away from her. And I was like, there's the Elliot I knew.
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah, that part will never go away because I think Brianna's supposed to be like 19 or 20. So she's not legal. And
yeah.
So it's like, what? They also they have these long, and they did this in the first episode too. They're drinking scotch or whiskey or something. And they're not in little tumblers. They're in tall glasses. Why?
A lot of whiskey.
Why are you drinking? I've never seen that before.
Y'all keep that up. You're all going to end up like Nate. Y'all need to take
it. Well, they weren't full. They had about.
I know, but still. I watched them pour there. And it looked like scotch. And I'm like, that's a lot of scotch.
Yeah. Yes. Good on you, Elliot, for taking away from the child.
Yes.
But yeah, that's the end of the episode.
We made.
Any other thoughts?
I laughed a lot. This much I can tell you.
Yeah.
Lots of great quips in this one. More so than some of the others, I think. It felt fun.
It is a fun one.
It felt fun.
I like to say Panamanian too.
It's fun to say Panamanian.
Good word. Yeah, I liked this one a lot. I mean, spoiler alert, I liked the entire series so far.
Well, I liked the whole thing, but.
Yeah. This one's really good. All right. I don't really have a heist light. Do you?
I do, if I can remember to tell it. I looked for one and then I saw it and I was like, ha ha, this sounds like something Sophie might do. So back in 2016, this French woman went into a London jeweler whose name escapes me. And of course I don't have my notes. So we're just going to have to roll with it here. Went into a London jeweler and pretended to be the personal gemologist of some Russian millionaire or what have you, billionaire, and was examining loose diamonds and then just put the bag in her purse. And they caught her putting the bag in her purse. And then she claimed she had faulty English and delayed and finally handed back the bag. And then walked out of the store.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, the gemologist has kind of an uneasy feeling about it and apparently had to x-ray it to see what was on the inside. And it was not the diamonds, it was pebbles. She'd switched out the diamonds for pebbles, not petals. That wouldn't weigh enough.
Yes. Was it a locked bag? Couldn't they open it?
That's the part that I was like, why are we x-raying it? Why don't we just open the bag? The Washington Post did not say, neither did CNN. So she goes back to France and it takes them a while to do the investigation and they finally come across her. I remember her first name is Lulu and she's 60 years old and they arrested her, extradited her from Paris to London and she got 5 years in jail, but they know it was a group of people They know that she was with two men when she first came to London back in 2016, but they don't know who the other people are. She's just part of a quote unquote international gang.
And but she's not breaking. She's not ratting on them.
No, 24 hours in and out, France to London, grab the diamonds back into France.
That's cool. That reminds me of, I think I talked about it, the book Diamond Doris.
I have that book, but I haven't read it yet.
It's good because it's like, I mean, I think she had a ghostwriter working with her, but it is like a first person memoir. And she would do not loose diamonds. She would go in and she would dress really nice. And this is like a Black woman during like the 50s and 60s too, which is like, makes it even more amazing to me. But she would walk in and look really rich and fancy, and she would try on different things. And the trick was to try something on and be like, oh, I don't know. And then try like multiple things on. So they are distracted by how many things they have out on the counter. And then you can just slip one on, an extra one on your fingers that you already have stuff on, and then walk off. And it takes them a while to realize of the six, seven things they've got out that something is missing. And then usually it would be more hassle to report it stolen and you'd get in trouble than to
your
like,
legal fees would be more than one piece of jewelry.
Yeah. Probably. So then they would just let it go. So she would get away with it. And she would take like trips to go do this other places and go to Europe and just like, and that's where it is, what we were talking about earlier, like people who love that rush.
Yeah.
Of doing that, because I'm like, the idea of doing that, like the anxiety against me is so much.
Nervous.
Yeah.
I can remember I took a trip to New Orleans with some friends of mine, and we were at the Ritz-Carlton, which is how you know it wasn't my idea and I didn't make the reservations, but it was lovely. And we're at the Ritz-Carlton concierge level, New Orleans. And while we're up there, they tell us we need to go check out this antique shop. So we go down there to this antique shop, and two of my friends are like trying stuff on, this vintage jewelry that costs more than my car and all of this. And the other, another girl and I, we're both like, museum hands. My gosh, I was getting so nervous and I wasn't even the jeweler.
Right.
But it was pretty cool. We went back into the back room of this antique store and spoke the magic word of one of the folks that worked up at the concierge level. And they took us in a secret compartment, like a secret room, back room. And it was all art.
I've heard about this place.
And there was an original Norman Rockwell. And that's what we went to see. But at one point we passed one painting and I did a double take. I'm like, I've seen that in one of my textbooks. It was like an impressionist something. And there were some others that I recognized. There was like a Dali back there. There was.
Oh, like, that's so no cool.
No way. And you know how expensive this was, because we walked by a matching set of Louis Vuitton trunks that I think were older than I am. I don't know how old Louis Vuitton is.
But yeah, no, it's
traveling
old.
Trunks, like huge trunks, like several of them matching.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in the floor, but the secret room had the art.
That's so cool. I've heard about that place. I forgot about it when I went to New Orleans. I don't know if I would have been able to get in. That's so cool. I love it. I love it.
It's a good thing I've got fancy friends, because I'm not.
Right? I do like having fancy and or rich friends. All right. So my only, I guess I have two sort of things. I forgot that I clicked on this link. There's someone, I think their name is Anna Lou. They have a Google document called Leverage, the Worst Timeline. And it's got a little John Rogers quote. It says, "Welcome to the country you don't know it exists, in the dirty little corners of your shining city on the hill," which is a John Rogers quote, apparently. So it says, Leverage bases its villains and crimes firmly in reality. This is a work in progress depository for links and resources regarding the very real corruption and cruelty behind the Leverage storylines.
Wow.
Yeah. And so they also say, you know, I try to include only reliable, accurate information, but mistakes can be made. And, you know, if you find any issues with the resources or if you have something you want to add, please contact me. And then their info is on there. But I'll put the link to this in the show notes. But so far they have some stuff from season 2 and season 3 and 5 of the original series. And then episode 1, 2, and 7 of the new season. So if you have any information and you want to add to it, you can get a hold of them. annalou.leverage@gmail.com. But I'll put that in the show notes if you want to go through that and be depressed. my other one, real quick. I talked about it in the last episode, but on the electricnow.tv website or on the Electric Now app is the official Leverage Redemption after show, which I've been referring to as a very distinctive podcast because that's how they also talk about it. But it's Yale, I can never say her name right, and Felicia. And they discuss the show, and because they're official, they also get interviews with people. So far, I've just been waiting to watch the episodes and listen to them for the ones that we're going to talk about. So I've only listened to the first two, but in this one, they talked to Christian Kane and they talked to John Rogers, they talked to him in both. And they had a really great interview with Aldous in the first one. And they had a little more on him in the second one. They played a little game with them. But Christian Kane, their interviews with these people are a lot more, because they are Leverage super fans, they're a lot more in depth than the other things that have come out just, you know, for Entertainment Weekly or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're really great to talk about. And especially Christian was talking about his, the changes in their looks. So Nadine Haters is still the costume designer. And he was like, when they were talking about the costumes, they're like, all right, this is what, you know, Sophie's going to wear. And this is what had all these pictures and everything of everybody and Brianna's look and Harry's look and everything. And then she, for Elliot's look, she just had a picture of Christian from season 1 in his Elliot clothes. And she's like, yeah, she's like, if it's not broke, don't fix it. So he's wearing the same stuff. Because as he says in this one, he achieved perfection early in life.
There you go.
And yeah, can't mess with a classic. But he talks about how they feel like a family. And a couple of years ago, they were all in town at the same time in LA and they all got dinner together, which I remember them posting on Instagram. And I was like, it's happening. And then nothing was announced for another year, but I was like, I can feel it. It's coming. It's happening. And then my last thing. So yeah, you should go listen, everybody, and watch those because they do have the bingo sheets and stuff. But this afternoon I was on Instagram, as you are, and Aldous Hodge updated and he posted that he is going to be in this spread for the fall issue of Vogue.
Ooh.
Photographed by Annie Leibovitz.
Oh. Okay.
And so I haven't looked at all of them. I've looked at a few and I'm like, oh my gosh. So very beautiful. If you want to see Aldous, he has a link on his Instagram bio. I will be looking at that later.
As one person said on Twitter, Aldous Hodge, that's the tweet.
That's it. That's the tweet.
That's it. That's all you need to know.
I know. And now we have to wait for him to come back. But I think he is going to be in a lot of the second half of the series. I hope. Fingers crossed.
How am I supposed to have a damn at Hardison if Hardison is not there?
Right.
Right.
Okay. It's not okay. La Comorette.
Hey, comrade.
La comrade. La comraton.
Did you go French?
No, raton. That's
in Spanish. That's it was the accent.
La comraton. I don't know. I took German, even though my mom was a Spanish teacher.
Das ist gut. But
das ist gut. Sehr gut.
There. It's all my German.
There we go. You say well, auf Wiedersehen.
Except for words that, yeah.
Yeah. It's fine. We swear on this podcast. It's okay.
That's true.
All right, Sally, do you have anything you want to plug or tell people where they can find you?
I do. I have things I must plug.
All right, do it.
Very important. I need everybody to go get a copy.
Okay.
On September 2nd, my new book comes out. It's called Much Ado About Barbecue. It's a very, very loose retelling of Much Ado About Nothing, but with warring barbecue houses.
As one does.
And a competition. I was about to say and a llama, but no, the llama does not make an appearance in this
one. Deanna's not in this one?
Deanna's not in this one.
She stays far away from the barbecue.
There's a reference to Julian bringing the animals for a petting zoo, and I'm sure Deanna's down there with him, but
okay.
If he would let Deanna be a part of a petting zoo, which we really need to think about, so.
Might not be a good idea.
But anyway, September 2nd, Much Ado
About Nothing. Love it. Love it. And where can people find you?
You can find me at sallykilpatrick.com. You can find me on Twitter at superwritermom. You can find me on Instagram also at superwritermom. And I'm on Facebook, but there are two of me. Just go to Twitter or Instagram, really.
Yeah.
We don't want to go to Facebook.
No. And she will answer messages on Facebook. She will answer messages on Instagram.
Maybe. Twitter's better. If you're in a
Twitter's
hurry,
better. Yeah.
Twitter's where you want to go.
I am on Twitter as well. I'm at LibrarianSti, and you can tell me everything. Because this little podcast has gotten a little more popular. Ooh. I have started a, how do you say it? Coffee? Ko-fi?
Ko-fi.
Ko-fi? Okay, I like
coffee.
It.
Ko-fi?
I don't know, because it's like to buy someone a coffee.
I think it's supposed to be pronounced coffee, but I look at it and I think of the wrestler Kofi Kingston.
Yeah. So. Well, anyways, that website, you guys know what I'm talking about. I set one up for the podcast. If you feel like throwing a couple dollars my way, I am paying $50 a month for this podcast now. For this website, and then also I have to pay for Zoom. But, you know, if you've got it in you, throw $3 my way, I'm happy.
And I'm ready to throw some money your way.
So it's ko-fi.com/letsgosteal-a-podcast. And I'll put the link in the show notes.
And then hopefully someday we'll go get coffee together.
Yes. In Portland.
Portland. We could go to Boston and then to Portland and then to New Orleans.
And the New Orleans. I like it. All right. Well, you won't see us again. She'll hear us again in 1 week when I've got Robin and the return of Corey. So it'll be three of us. It's going to be chaos. We're going to be talking about the Rolling on the River job, which is a chaotic episode as well.
Just as well, because I'd be singing Tina Turner. So I'm going to leave y'all to it. Lest I sing Tina.
No, I mean, we probably will as well. So when you listen to the episode, you can sing along. All right. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.